All right, alchemists, I am so excited to share our first episode with a guest with you here shortly. Tyson does such an incredible job of being rooted in his values, and I really hope that this podcast episode brings to light the importance of that, how it leads to his decision-making process, how it shaped him as a leader, and how it's inspiring the people around him through his pedagogy. So I hope you enjoy this one. Sit back, relax, and here's to our first episode with a guest.
This is the Elemental Educator, the podcast where we kindle the fires of dialogue with the alchemists of education. We're here to embark on a journey where ancient wisdom meets the contemporary world of education. On Elemental Educator, we dive into the deep waters of adaptability, feel the grounding earth of core values, ride the swift winds of change, and ignite the fiery spirit of risk-taking. Fire. Earth. Wind. Water. This is the Elemental Educator, and now your host, Tyler Como.
All right, alchemists, welcome back to our second episode. I'm going to call this episode one, though, because it's our first episode with a guest, and I am thrilled to have Tyson Lancaster here with us today. Tyson, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. I'm so pumped for this. Now, I know your story a little bit, but the people around us don't know your story, and the people listening might not know your story. So I want to start with unpacking who you are, how you got to education, and what's inspiring you to continue being in education.
Well, that is a full question. I guess it started right out of high school. I knew that I needed to do something that was impactful to people around me. I knew that the teachers that were in my life were my go-tos, right? And so I wanted to make sure that I was there doing a job that was impactful to people. And I always joke, my grandfather was very practical, and he was like, you need to go in to be a plumber. That's what you need to be, because, you know, there's money in that and this and that, the other thing. And his world wasn't about education. And I looked at him and I said, that'd be a really crappy job. And I didn't pursue that. And we had a lot of laughter around
that. Was that a pun intended?
Totally. Plumber, I actually kept it PG.
There we go.
Yeah. I took a journey to Lakeland College, small town kid from Sedgwick, Alberta, you know, only child, took off on my own and went to the college, did a couple of years there, did some cool things there, went to U of A, finished my degree in elementary education with a minor in ed psych, and came out to Dewberry, Alberta, where I knew there was a chuck wagon. I had been passed a couple of times with my grandpa to go to a rodeo, and my grandparents lived down the road from there, but I'd never really known the area all that much. So I was like, yeah, there was a posting for a grade 5-6 teacher, a junior high options teacher, and other duties assigned by the principal. And so I applied for the job on a whim, hoping I'd get it, not really sure what would come of it. And it was pretty cool. I came out, I showed up too early, drove around town for an hour, did the interview, and got the call, you know, within that short time frame. Answered the call while I was subbing, because I was not risking not getting the job. And the rest is history, I guess. I taught here for a year in Dewberry and took a 5-year leave to Kitscotty Elementary, where I taught grade 5 and 6, became an assistant principal, came back to Dewberry, and then was assistant principal for a bit, came back to the classroom and did some cool things. There's my journey in a nutshell.
We skimmed over so many things in that topic that I want to unpack. Wow. Thank you for sharing. So you come to Dewberry, and how was it different from where you were before? You weren't a teacher before. It was your first job, but you come here with a mindset of what it might be, and maybe it's not fully that, or maybe it is. But what was different between your imagination and what it ended up unfolding to?
I had no clue what I was coming into, for certain sure. And so coming out here, I knew I was very keen. University really laid down the law of the ethics and the you shall do this and you shall do that and you shall not do this and shall not do that. And Dewberry was kind of one of those places that I thought, well, I knew I wanted to teach rural. I had some experiences in Edmonton. And I just thought that wasn't where I wanted to be in education. My heart was back in the rural Alberta. And I guess I came out here and my first impression was, holy moly, what am I getting myself into? I was dodging potholes on the streets that weren't paved. They're gravel roads. It's a very small community. And I got out here and I got teaching and very quickly realized that this community was more home than I'd ever have experienced. I moved into the seniors complex in town because that was what there was to rent. And I walked school every day and I became known as that teacher in town, that new teacher. And just, you kind of embody that persona when you move to this community as the new teacher. And really, I got involved with, I never watched hockey, but I went to every single kids hockey game there was to be had because I was a single guy in Dewberry. And I went to all their hockey games. I tried to make it to all the sports games. I'm teaching grade 5, 6. It was kind of cool coming to this community because what I knew about it was chuck wagon racing. Growing up as a chuck wagon race fan, I suppose, I taught the legends' grandkids, right? And so to start with, that was kind of like a really cool thing. And then I got to know all of these families in this area so well. And it was such a unique experience. The relationships that could be built in a community so quickly, and to see that there are small communities that are one big family. And then to see Dewberry School on top of it all being one big family. And that hasn't changed in the 11 years. I mean, even going away and coming back, that is what makes this place so magical.
And you really touch on one thing that's important to me. It's one of my elements. It's that grounded mindset and playing off of the earth. So within this whole idea of coming here and building those connections, going to hockey games, engaging with those kids, right? And that legacy that you even talked about of the chuck wagon greats and teaching their grandkids and that fallout to it, there's a value rooted in you, right? And there's a value rooted in you about the relationships, the connections, and the family, right? And so I'm hoping that you can maybe speak to how that value has translated to your classroom, translated to your life.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know where to start with that. I guess towards the end of my first year of teaching here, I met my current wife. And it was one of those pieces that you want to talk about family. I went to the post office and the lady at the post office said, you're not leaving here. You're going to meet your wife. You're going to settle down. You're going to have kids and we're going to keep you here forever. And I laughed at her. And that was, October. Come May, here I meet my now wife, and we have almost 3 children. And so the value first came in, I need to add value to the community if I'm going to be here, because there were so many people that were adding value in every way, shape, or form. You looked at the arena, you looked at the hall, I became part of the Dewberry Dinner Theater. We did many performances with the idea that we're going to give back to the community. And then my hope was that students would see my example and be inspired to also be that example, right? I truly believe that if you're going to talk it, you better walk it, right? And that became kind of my mission within the community, is to stay involved and stay relevant. Even after I left Dewberry, we moved away briefly and then we bought a house here, and I still worked. I lived in the community. I stayed connected into it. But then I went and worked to Kitscotty Elementary and was just as involved in that community. And I think that rootedness in the community value and being involved and being present really translates into being present in my classroom, being present for my family, being present for people who just need you to be present. That it really translates to everywhere. Is that challenging? Absolutely. And so when it comes to thinking through our values, my family, then through some mentorship and coaching of people we're connected with and changing our association a little bit, understanding that we can have that as an impact of our own family legacy, we decided that we needed to narrow some of our values down and really make our top 5 values. And that translates into education and in different ways, I guess.
And just to clarify, almost 3 kids, because there's one on the way, right?
Yes, absolutely. We're my wife is due in May with our 3rd. So
there we go. So just bringing some context to the word almost 3 kids. That's awesome. So we have this amazing route. We have this amazing system in place. Why did you leave to Kitscotty?
I was here on a temporary contract, and I knew that getting into it. And then the teacher decided that she was coming back. And so it was one of those pieces that there wasn't a spot for me. I was very fortunate, and I have to give credit to the people that were in my life that first year of teaching, the staff here. I was nominated for a teaching award. Never did I expect to get it.
Don't downplay this. What were you nominated for?
Well, I was nominated for the Edwin Parr Award.
Okay.
Excellence in Teaching for your first year.
Huge in Alberta.
Yeah.
Massive award.
Wow.
Provincial wide.
And I was absolutely fortunate enough to win it. It was really a cool experience because it allowed me to get to know different people at different levels, right? And, at that time I became known to the Board of Trustees, which allowed me to have some really cool connections for my students. I had different opportunities for interviews and all of that kind of stuff. But what it came down to was who had my back during that time. And they really encouraged me to take hold of my classroom and run with it. I remember when Kwame, he said, "I know you're wet behind the ears and green, but I want to work with you. And I think there's lots of potential for you in education." And he was really there as that person who was innovative and kind and took an interest and let me just run with the crazy ideas that I had. And then we worked through what didn't work and did work. And through that process, he was, in and out of my room, but really promoted that trust as an educator, as a first year, which I feel like sometimes first year teachers, I get to work a lot with first year teachers because I run the mentorship program for Buffalo Trail and Park Plains East. And every year I get to see them and there's nerves and there's nervousness. And my advice to them is just be confident in what you know. Go get messy. Go have fun with it. Right? Whatever Miss Frizzle says, go do that.
There's so many things to unpack in that. So the first part, though, was you actually came to Dewberry on the first time, taking a massive risk and just covering a temporary contract, not knowing what that would be for you for the rest of your life, if you'd get to stay, if you'd be kicked out, if you'd be kicked out of the division, what that would look like.
Yeah.
Why did you take that risk?
I needed a job. Simple as that, right?
That's what it comes down to, yeah.
I actually started my first ever... There's some fun story. So I subbed for 2 months. I was living in the Wainwright area with family at a campground there. And they were so gracious to like, go sub if you can sub. We'll find someone to cover you if you're not able to. And so I subbed for almost 2 months, pretty steady at Wainwright High School. As an elementary teacher, that was a risk in itself because I'd only ever really experienced elementary classrooms. And then I guess my first ever sub day was kindergarten and grade two in kindergarten in Manville. And then we did that time at Wainwright High School. And I thought, well, you know what? Maybe I can do it like a 1-12 school. I managed to spend a lot of time in grade eight. And it was a class that had some unique needs. And I just had so much fun with them. And at that point, it was kind of funny because it was one of those classes that no more subs wouldn't sub for anymore. And I got in there. I had a blast. I knew that I thought that I wanted to be in that area. And then to be quite honest, I applied for like 6 different jobs. I went on to apply to education. I applied for whatever I could apply for.
I think that's what most do.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And when I got the call for Dewberry, I'm like, well, I think I know where that is. I'll go. Whatever. Right. And yeah, that was the risk. Like I had nothing holding me back at that time to go anywhere, right? I wasn't rooted.
That's the statement, is there's nothing holding you back. And I think we'll get there eventually here in this conversation. Yeah. But what we'll realize is almost every risk that we end up taking, we always consider what's actually holding us back in that moment, mm-hmm. right? And we learn it's actually very little.
Right.
So, okay. So risk, not risk, change, not change. You come here, you have that awesome year, you win some kind of cool award. You have a change in scenery, you end up at Kidscotty Elementary.
Yeah.
And what was that change process like? And so as you're going through a new school, a new environment, how did you adapt to the changes?
Well, I learned very quickly that different leadership styles within buildings required different responses, and being able to learn to become attuned to an environment when it was just very different. In a 1-12 school that was very much in a state of change and excitement, to an elementary school that was rooted in their core values. And so I had to really figure out what those core values were, right? It was just different. And then going from teaching everything under the sun to grade five, that was a change in itself. Going from a classroom of grade five, 6 students with 13 kids in it to a 7-8-9 class of 20 kids in it to a grade five classroom with 18, and then a grade 5-6 classroom with 20, and then a grade 6 classroom with 26. Like it was just different. I also came from a staff of, I think, 13 people to a staff of 33 people. And so cultures were shifting. That school was in a shift too. The administrators were on their retirement year. And so then that was just a lot of learning of their style and their traditional style in education, and the value behind, I guess, learning really quickly that I better become a reader. Because that school was all about reading and all about the love of reading. And after university, I think I lost my love of reading for a little while, and I was teaching kids to read, but then I wasn't reading myself. So that school really sparked in me, okay, walk the talk. So I'm a reader. And I became a very consistent reader at that school.
One thing that stood out to me was you made a comment about how that school was very rooted in their core values.
Mm-hmm.
And those values were different than the values of the school mm-hmm. you came from. However, you still found a way to bring your values into your classroom and your setting.
Right.
So even in the face of change, you stuck to your values.
Totally.
Right. And so how did doing that impact your pedagogy?
Yeah. And you know what? I think in my second year of teaching, I was still kind of floating in the wind in terms of finding my values. I knew what I was rooted in, which was what was best for kids. And I was a little bit of a steamroller when it came to that. And I think that's where I met some resistance in that school, particularly because I definitely had some out there philosophies in teaching. I was much about collaboration. I was much about inclusion. I had to work that year with Inclusion Alberta and Inclusion Lloydminster, a student that will forever be near and dear to my heart. I learned so much that year about inclusive education and what really is best for kids. And that was something that was new not the concept of what's best for kids. That was not new to that building, because at the heart of everything they did was what was best for kids. I had to navigate what I thought was best for kids and what the collective thought was best for kids and find a common ground. And so through that, I learned so much from I learned to value the seasoned teachers. There were, I think that year there were 6 or 7 teachers in that building who had taught for 30 plus years. Well, you bet I leaned into them, right? Did I always understand why they did what they did or had the opinion that they had? No, but I learned that if I just stopped and listened to them, they then were willing to hear me out as well. And that was a hard lesson to learn. And I'm pretty sure that any one of those teachers, if they, you know, hear this podcast, they're going to know, oh yeah, they're going to laugh at that, because I definitely needed to learn to listen.
And a big part of that too is being able to listen. You can form your own opinion still, and you can run with that, and you can go with that, right? And so that's a powerful lesson to learn. So thank you for sharing. One thing with that. So you're at this school, you're there for 5 years. Between year one and year five, there is still change happening. Mm-hmm. You're working with new kids. You're at that point switching leadership, right? You become a leader yourself in the building. How do you go about with all of these changes, accepting the change that's happening around you, embracing that change? And even with the resistance, with the change you're trying to push out, how do you overcome the resistance?
You just keep going. You gotta get gritty, right? I learned a great administrator there who would often reality check me and go, stop second guessing yourself and just keep going, right? And part of overcoming that is knowing why you're doing what you're doing. And one of my favorite phrases is, if you lose your why, you lose your way. And I didn't know it then, but I've become through a reflective practice of 11 years in education, I've come to know that I'm rooted in the why of what's best for kids. I'm rooted in the why of if it doesn't have to be how it always has been. And if there's a challenge of, like, you know, doing something creative or innovative and I'm encouraged to do it, or I find people who know people who know people who are willing to work on things, let's just make it happen, right? At Kitscotty, I rolled through 1, 2, 3, 4. I think 6 administrators before myself, right? Like between assistant principals and principals, I guess, including myself. And we did a lot of work in that building in those 5 years that I was there about mission and mantra and finding a vision, finding core values within a school, becoming aligned. And so through that process, I think was the start of my understanding of knowing my why in education. And when it came time to leave there, as always, I got super attached to everything there and didn't really want to. But the opportunity to come back to Dewberry was, I could not pass that up, right? And it was one of those, like, the great principal shuffles. And there was a principal shuffled into my position as I was a temporary contract. And so that temporary principalship led me to apply to Dewberry, and you know, I got that. But the shift there was learning how to develop a mission statement, learning how to develop a mantra, and doing that with 33 people around a table is not easy, right? And some cool things that transpired is we managed to create a list of standards to which we would conduct ourselves in meetings. We learned to hear each other out through circle talks as a staff and using restorative justice circles with children and staff members when we have disagreements, and being able to come to consensus on things. Didn't mean we had to agree on it all, but we had to at least come to a common ground. And through that, I think allowed me to learn how to navigate some of those difficult conversations, but also stay rooted to what I know and inspect the fruit that I'm rooted with, right? So another quip that I like to say, and I have people in my life that say, is, you know, if you don't like the fruit, inspect the root. And what do you need to do to that root? And then in order to improve that fruit, you need to nourish it, you need to water it, you need to be grounded within and inspect the ground, right? Are you in a drought yourself? Because if you're in a drought for whatever aspect of who you are, you know, if you're neglecting one aspect, that fruit's going to show that, right? Just like rings on a tree. And so taking that time to be introspective and reflect and actually ask people around you, like, okay, how do you think I'm doing right now? Because here's how I think I'm doing. And sometimes that reality check goes, oh, there's a blind spot that somebody pointed out, right? I'm on a bit of a tangent, I think, from your question.
But no, and you bring in a really good aspect about being vulnerable and having that conversation, being able to connect with those people and say, how am I doing? How's it going? Not an English teacher, but I'm pretty sure you alluded to a metaphor with the root system here. And sometimes it goes beyond my head, but I'm thinking we're referring back to core values, and we're thinking back to reflecting on why we do things. And you lose your why, you lose your way really resonates with me. But this whole bad fruit, look at the root type of thing, I don't even fully know if I understand it fully, but I know where it's coming from. And it's the idea of reflecting on why you do things, which is really important. Mm-hmm. From that, you said that you did a ton of work on mission, vision. This is something that every school, every teacher, every division will work on.
Right.
But this is one of the times where it's done with intention.
And hopefully it's done with intention to not just talk about the adults in the room, but to talk about how it impacted the kids.
Yeah.
And so are you able to speak to how those conversations rooted to how you went about leading kids through that mission and vision mantra?
Absolutely. It was really a cool process because we sat down as teachers and we looked at what we thought we were about as a school. And then we did action research and went back to our kids and we talked to them about what they thought about our school. We threw together some words as what we thought the mission could be. And we went back to the kids and said, let's talk about what these words mean. And then we put together a mantra and we went back to the kids and went, what do you think these words mean? And then we came back and we came back and we came back. We went to our classes and we came back to meetings. And it was a 2-year process really of coming up with this and a lot of heated debate and discussion. And you really got to understand people's whys about what they do. And not all their whys aligned with mine, but what we could agree upon is, yeah, we need to get aligned in something. Right. What it came down to is that their mission was, or their mantra was, learning together, growing together. And when it came down to, and now the words of the mission have escaped me a little bit, but it was a lot to do with being in a safe and caring environment and helping others to learn as well. Something I, again, the words have escaped me, but what it came down to was I could hold kids accountable to, are you helping other people to learn right now? Are you being accountable to their safety? Are you learning together with them? Are you growing together? And learning together, growing together really became a part of everything that we did. We even had a rock band come out and record a school song, and it played at every assembly. And it went through all the elements of the school and the mission statement and the mantra. And it, I think, as far as I know, they still use it, right? And the kids get really excited about it. They sing it. It was like, Kids Scotty Elementary. Anyway, I still remember it. It was really cool. Anyways, all in all, how I actioned it with kids, and I believe how I saw others action it with kids, was how is this benefiting others' learning? How is this benefiting your learning? How are we doing this together? And together meant the adults too. It wasn't what we committed to is, as a staff, we are lifelong learners. So we also are learning together and growing together and growing in our knowledge, growing in our togetherness, growing in our why.
Does that still impact you?
Yeah, I think so. Sometimes that thought rolls in because it was so foundational in my early career. It was the first 5 years of teaching that I did that. And that first 5 years of teaching, there's lots of, and now I can't cite any of it, but I know that I've read articles on that first 5 years of teaching impacting the rest of your career because you build those habits, good or bad.
It's your make it or break it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. So you go there, all this work, all this change, all these awesome things, you come back to Dewberry. And you kind of have a leadership role when you get to come back and you have that experience within leadership. How do you now take that lens of accepting change, working with change, to you get to be the one implementing that change, not just to kids, but to staff around you? And how are you cultivating that environment?
Oh, that's a steep question. That's a good question. I think I came to Dewberry open to listening, and I was going to not do what I did at Kids Scotty Elementary, right? And I knew that it would be different. I knew that some of the staff were the same, but some of the staff were different and I hadn't worked with. I had friends on staff. I also, my grades 5 class was in grade 12 that year. So it was really, or no, I guess it was my grade 6 class in grade 12. And it was really cool to be able to shake their hand as they walked across stage, as they were my first students, and now I'm shaking their hand as they graduate. And I missed all the in-between times, but what was cool is I never left the community. So I was still involved in Dewberry Dinner Theater. I was still involved in volunteering at some of the things at the arena. I was still involved with volunteering for the Dewberry Hall Society. I was still involved with the museum. And I still came to some of their games and that sort of thing. So I still had the connections with the kids and the families. And some of the families really became friends. So what I had to learn was a little bit of boundaries. Boundaries between what I'd created as a teacher in a different community. And then I was no longer Mr. Lancaster, the teacher in Dewberry. I was Tyson Lancaster, the community member. And I now had to come back and be Mr. Lancaster, the vice principal and teacher and community member, and raise my own kids and be a son-in-law and a brother-in-law and all of these components because my wife's family's all here, right? And cultivating change, cultivating those components of what was already good here and then just amplifying that, right, is what I had to come back and realize. There had been quite a lot of change in Dewberry that year before I got here, between one principal going to central office and then people being moved around in the building and then going off to different schools as well. And so we came in as two new administrators, brand new admin team, different leadership style, different expectations, different experiences. And I think what was the hardest thing for me in that transition is not living in nostalgia, what it was the 5 years ago that I was here. not living in that because things had changed, but also letting go of all of the work that I did at Kitsgatti Elementary and knowing that I had to do that here. A lot of it was already rooted. I was part of the mission and vision statement in my first year here. Mainly we came up with the mantra and some mission vision. Working together for success was the conversation that we built around. And then after I left, they continued that work. And so we picked it up and there were good things happening. I just had to figure out how I fit into those good things. I think what I had to figure out was what needed to change and what was working well. And what was my opinion of what needed to change maybe wasn't the opinion of everybody else.
And how did you reach those decisions on what needed to be changed or what didn't need to be changed?
A lot of it was, well, I have to admit, as a vice principal, it's a tricky dance because you are a leader in a school, but it's not necessarily completely your vision because the buck doesn't actually stop with the assistant principal. And some context is, at that time, Dewberry School was two schools. It was Dewberry School and Students Online. And the principal looked after Students Online and the high school side of things. And the assistant principal made sure that everything ran smoothly in the 1-9. And so I didn't have a lot of experience with high school. So I'd have, you know, I stayed kind of away from the high school side of it for that year, that first year. But what was interesting was the dynamic between having teachers have some pretty heavy roles in Students Online, also teaching in Dewberry School because of the necessity to do that. And then figuring out, I've taught grade 5 and 6 for the last 5 years, and now I have to just fit. And so I learned how to teach junior high. Again, I'd stayed away from high school for the first couple of years. And so I think I'm a little off track of your question.
No, you're right on track. And we're going to go somewhere with it here. You talked about elementary and now having to also take on junior high. Mm-hmm. And we know that eventually you take on senior high.
Right.
So in that process, reflecting on what changed with you in your pedagogy, what actually changed between you having to teach an elementary and you having to teach a junior high?
Nothing. Great. Hear me out when I say this. All I had to do was take my teacher toolbox and apply it to the curriculum. And it sounds super simple, but part of the work that I did at Kitsgatti Elementary is we really dive deeply into books like Making Thinking Visible, concept-based instruction, lots of lead learning. And I came into it teaching junior high English, which I loved teaching grade 6 English, language arts. And so I knew I had a pretty solid foundation of grade 5 and 6 coming into grade 7 and what they would need. And so I guess the pedagogy turned into using Making Thinking Visible activities. How do I take these kids who were taught by somebody else for grade 6, who learned a different way, and now I apply it to a setting that is needing some higher order thinking, some more intense curriculum dynamics, and then get them to actually engage in it, for one, finding books that were interesting and finding that balance between building solid relationships, but also still maintaining that teacher efficacy, right? I think that's the biggest shift between an elementary and a junior senior high is knowing how to maintain boundaries within relationships within students and having strong expectations of learning, like clearly outlined expectations. And I know one of the books that's impacted me the most in my career is The First Days of School. And it's so simple, but it's classroom management techniques. It's even right down to how people respond to how you dress. And I know there's lots of conversation that we can have around that between, you know, elementary and junior senior high and just holding yourself and having that confidence. I think being confident in what I was doing, even though some days I really didn't know what I was doing, recognizing that grade 7s are still grade 6 kids that need to learn that way. And they need a gap bridged between elementary learning and senior high learning. And I think sometimes, contrary to popular belief, I think sometimes we as junior high teachers forget that. And so I learned very quickly that, oh, this isn't that much different. I was still able to apply my centers to language arts. I was still able to apply the fun activities that I did in social studies to social studies. I got to come teach drama again. Like, there were just some really cool things that I got to do. What was different was I had to learn the world of inclusive learning on top of leading a school and then understanding everybody's understanding of inclusive learning, which Dewberry School does a fantastic job of, but then recognizing that I needed to help coach that, right? And so pedagogy-wise, I don't think a lot had to change in order to jump back into the classroom. I just needed to learn the curriculum and then see what I already knew, how it would apply.
I'm so glad you said that because kids are kids, mm-hmm. are kids. Our kids.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's a kid in lower elementary, if it's a kid in upper elementary, if it's a kid in junior high, or if it's a kid in senior high, they're kids. Mm-hmm. And we need to do what's best for them. And the tools we build and diving into heavy Bloom's-based really concepts and the idea of how do we assess and teach kids in a way that's best for them shouldn't change based on a grade level. It should change based on what a kid needs for how they learn best.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's inclusive learning. Mm-hmm. It's not so much, oh, you're grade seven, so you learn this way. We're going to have 30 grade sevens learn 30 different ways.
Absolutely.
And what tools did we build to reach out to them those ways? So this teaching journey that we're on is something really incredible, but you're also doing something else really incredible, which is you have your own company that you're essentially running. Mm-hmm. And so maybe for people listening, give them a small snippet of what that is, but mainly how this idea of your values and how this idea of change and resiliency impact that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a handful of years ago, we met a couple that they were able to step away from what they do at a quite a young age. Like they were able to replace their income and live through their values. And through their coaching and mentorship, we worked to earn their relationship. And they really changed my mind and my understanding of how things in the world work, you know, that it is possible that someday I could actually be a full-time dad, right? And so the value that my wife chose to be able to step away from her work in early childhood education to become a full-time mom and teacher to our own kids, you know, it took some time to get there. And so we leveraged, you know, just different platforms in the marketplace as a business model, because we live in a free enterprise society where, you know, we can do that. And I'm so grateful to be able to work in the public sector and impact within public education. My heart is still here. What I was taught was there are times in as an educator that you can only do so much, you know, and part of my story that, you know, it doesn't need to go into this podcast, but part of my story is I was really uplifted by a lot of the teachers, and they gave me a lot of hope that I could move forward and achieve great things going through some adversity. And so as I was teaching and doing those things, I realized that I needed to do more to impact people at the root of the home. And so we actually needed to figure out the root of our own home, because we were pretty great on the outside. But when it came to, like, we were the power couple in the community. I think people see us as that sometimes. Or did at that point, but we were in shambles at home. We were a complete mess. You know, I was working a lot of hours. I was volunteering for a lot of things, which I'm still passionate about, but I needed to get life on track a little bit to find that the boundary. I don't like the word balance, because life is unbalanced and that's okay, right? There are seasons you're going to go through that you're going to be out of balance. And if you are ever in balance, I think you need to check yourself, because you're not doing something right, right? You're not growing somewhere, right? And so within the work that we do within our family, we had to really dig in and figure out, well, what did we as a family stand for? Because my wife and I weren't aligned in that. She was so great to just let me go and do my thing. But I, you know, COVID hit, and at the end of the, you know, first 6 months of Netflix, after creating online plans all day, still having to come into the building because that was the protocol, she was off with our one-year-old, and I didn't know her anymore. We seemingly had kind of lost contact and touch with each other. And so this couple has coached us in all facets of life. And one of the things that they talked about was finding your core values. And so digging around, like, well, how the heck do I find values? And they shared about theirs and whatnot. And so we went to Brené Brown's book, Dare to Lead. I just finished reading it at that time. And in the back of her book, she refers to a list of values on her website that you could go to. And she had alluded to go pick your top five, then go to your spouse, have her pick her top five, and sit down together and decide what actually you have in alignment. And so what we had in alignment was our family, number one, right? And faith. And right around that time, we had started down a faith walk. We'd played with different things, you know, as you do in your 20s, and try to figure yourself out, who you are, like, you know, that existential crisis that we go through, right? And, you know, we found our faith. It doesn't mean that everybody else has to find the same faith that we did, but we found it also a definition of faith. And so our top value in our family, and I'll walk through our five values, but our top value is faith. But faith is in many aspects. Faith is making a decision and believing in that decision and following through with it regardless of the outcome. You don't necessarily know the outcome that's going to happen, but you're going to have faith that you're going to get there successfully, right? You have faith when you cross the street in a city that you're not going to get hit by a bus typically, right? But faith isn't blind. Faith is doing it with calculated risk. Faith is being able to, you know, ask people, who do you know that I need to know? And then I think that's a total John Maxwell phrase, right? And he speaks of that a lot in his podcast and his books is about, you know, if he wants to learn something, go and ask. And so stepping out in faith and asking those hard questions, regardless of knowing the response you're going to get, but also being rooted in something and making a decision to believe it, right? Our next value is family. And so when we make decisions in terms of what we're going to volunteer for now or fundraise for or things like that, it's going to be based on what's going to impact our family. How is it going to benefit our family, close and extended? Right. And if it turns out that I'm just doing it for the sake of doing it because it needs to happen in our community, maybe somebody else can just do it and I can, you know, I can take that time with my family. That being said, you know, that be careful with that, because then the opportunity comes that your private kindergarten needs a president and voila, here I am. Right. Like, but it's because I value education. I value that my daughter was going to step into that program. And so I was going to take it on. It's been a cool experience, but it's a pretty heavy duty volunteer position for when you're working with, you know, the same type of caliber of system that an Edmonton school would. But anyway, I digress. Next is impact. This is a really cool value in our family, because when we make decisions in terms of what we're going to do, what we're going to buy, what we're going to spend our money on, you vote with your dollar. We have to really decide what the impact of that is going to be. Again, that goes right back to volunteering. That goes right back to who we're going to talk to. It also goes back to how we talk to each other. Because if you're heated, as husbands and wives get, or son-in-laws and mother-in-laws get, or whatever that is, you have to stop and think and choose your battle and choose what's the impact of this phrase and statement going to be. And I think of that in the class. If we tie that back to the classroom, I often think about, okay, if I walk into a classroom with everything that's heavy in that day, how is that going to impact my students? So they don't need to know that stuff, right? So it's about finding, again, that boundary between what you're going through and the work that needs to get done. And so the same goes for impact in terms of who we connect with, what events that we go to, and books that we read even. I love teaching English and I love getting kids fired up about books. I don't enjoy reading fiction. It wastes my time. I'm constantly in a leadership and success principle book because if I'm going to spend my time reading, I'm going to do it and apply it to my life and not get lost in the impact of what I'm filling myself up with. Right. And so often people will fill themselves up with scrolling and like they'll doom scroll or they'll watch things that really are not good for their mental health or that will support their family or waste their time. I'm totally not a hockey, watch NHL. I'm sorry, I'm not a sports fan. Right. Because I'm not a sporty person. So I'm not going to benefit from, oh, look at that play, I'm going to apply it. Right. But I might go to watch something in theater and go, okay, that's really cool. I can take that and apply it to area of my interest. Right. Lastly, we have freedom because we believe that we should, you know, live in a free country, be able to have freedom of movement and choice and some of those pieces. But then our last one is grace. Grace above all, because, well, it fits into our faith for one, right? You know, we've been saved by grace. Again, doesn't have to be everybody's belief, but having grace with ourselves. I am the worst personal critic of myself. And I constantly have to remind myself if I screw up that, hey, that's okay. We can learn from this, right? And I think that goes into it. And having grace with students, having grace with my wife when, you know, she does things maybe that I disagree with, but also knowing that she's going to have grace with me when I do the same, right? And we come back and have that conversation. We're going to go, let's forgive and move on. Doesn't mean you have to forget, but let's forgive and move on and figure out how we can release some of that. And then having grace with students in their learning, grace with administrators, grace with other colleagues, family members, those kind of pieces, because who are we to judge what other decisions people make, but how can we impact them to make a different decision moving forward?
I love that. Thank you very much for sharing. That's that's a lot of passion put behind, you know, these five values and really tying back to the root of everything. See what I did there with root?
Yeah, okay. Good job.
And we really wanted to get back to that whole element of that earth mindset. And this is how you grounded yourself and you grounded your family. And you went somewhere where I was going to ask, so I'm not even going to ask it anymore, but it was about that connection between these values to your education and your pedagogical practice and how you lead as a leader. We're at that stage though, where I just want to know, where are you at now and what's next for Tyson?
Yeah, that's a good question. Where am I at right now? I'm still on that journey of growth for sure. In the next couple of months is I'm going to be a dad to three. And so that's going to change things. Let me remind you, I'm an only child. So I didn't grow up with siblings. My wife has many, many siblings and we have many in-laws, you know, as a result of that. And so she's more accustomed to the large family. I'm becoming accustomed to the large family. You know, it's amazing. My life has always been about a passion for kids. And so I'm so excited to be able to have my own brood. But coming back to what else is going on. So there's just some really cool things happening at Dewberry School. And one of the passion projects that I had the opportunity to work with is this chicken coop up and running a few years back. So a little bit of a side story is we had some students in grade 12 that we knew weren't going to graduate and we needed to make a change for them. And I knew very little about chickens. I knew that growing up, my grandpa had them running around and they sat in the rafters of the barn and you had to dodge some bombs once in a while. And that's about all I knew about them. But I had connections to people in the green certificate world who said, hey, this is really easy. Let's do this. And they connected to me to people like Dr. Frank Robinson from the University of Alberta and Susan Schaefer's from STS Farms and Dave Lestuca from Egg Farmers of Alberta and Art Van Zanten from Trout Nutrition. I keep going on, who said, hey, this is a really cool project. Let us help you. And so with the support of my then principal, with Buffalo Trail, with that group of advisors, we got this program going where students can get 16 plus 2 credits through my influence and my impact, but their choice to raise this flock of 25 laying hens and just steward some entrepreneurship out of them, right? And learning the five freedoms and responsibility. And it's really cool. So I'm excited to carry that on, but I'm also excited to take part in some forward planning on seeing what we can do to move our school forward into some like full cycle farming, for instance, compost projects, potentially greenhouse projects, you know, agriculture and culture projects with land. Lots of cool things in the works that I think we better just hold off on sharing too much yet because I'm a little excited without having a whole lot of approval. So
yeah, and there's a whole lot of works in the process here too.
Yeah. But yeah, we hope to make it work.
Yeah. You know, in terms of my career in educational leadership, I don't know yet. I'm really excited to be in the leadership role that I am in this building. Eventually, I'll pursue it again, I'm sure. But for right now, my leadership needs to be within our school community, the capacity that I have it. And I need to have the capacity to lead my family. So that's where I'm at with that. Taking calculated risks, right? I know that if I was to take a leap of faith and jump in, there have been other opportunities in the division to jump into principalships and that. Taking the calculated risk said, just whoa. You're where you're supposed to be right now. And I'm excited. I've never felt so much contentment and excitement at the same time. Very far from complacent. And so
that's very cool. Well, Tyson, for anybody that's listening, if they want to hear more of your story or get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, sure. If anybody wants to get a hold of me, I think the best email maybe would be ts.lancasteressentials@gmail.com.
There we go. And just before we wrap up here today, for anybody that's listening, that's still listening, because I'm sure I bore them and I don't know what an Edwin Parr winner does here. No, it's been incredible. And I thank you so much for being here, Tyson. What advice would you give if you could give one sentence of advice to anybody listening? And it can't be you lose your why, you lose your way. And it can't be check the root of the fruit if it's rotten or something.
Perfect.
Before it composts. I don't know.
I think that you need to sit down and look at what your five top values are and filter everything through those. That would be my greatest advice for moving forward. It just takes the questioning out of everything. If you can run it through a filter of those five things, it makes it a whole lot easier.
Well, this was a lot of fun for me. Thank you so much for joining.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is super exciting. I've never done this before.
I can't wait to do the next one and see where we end up. Maybe 2-3 years from now, we do next episode and we see where your journey is.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Okay. Until next time.
You've been listening to The Elemental Educator. Our aim is to illuminate optimal educational practices on a global scale. And second, we want to shine a light on the expertise and knowledge that Tyler brings to educational institutions. He's not just a talking head. He's a practicing educator, a school principal, armed with a master's in educational administration, and on the brink of completing his doctorate. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe. We'll be back soon, but in the meantime, find us on Instagram, Facebook, and X at Elemental Educator. And to contact us, fire off an email. See what I did there? Fire off. Okay. Send an email to elementaleducator@gmail.com. See you next time on The Elemental Educator.